What we're going to talk about today is the model, the civic organizing model again, and going into a little more detail about how it is unique and how it is really a political model and what makes it a political model.
And maybe also in that process we'll be talking a little bit, or we'll be illuminating some of the barriers to being able to advance it, you know, and they reflect also the barriers of producing it in the last 20 years. So we talked about civic principles as being political principles, and because they're about how we govern. So that makes them a political, intentional political grounding for this approach. And those principles tell you what the struggle is, and that has to do with the way democracy works, that it's a process, it isn't a given. And it is not who we elect. It is this process of always discerning what is the right thing to do in this particular time, that is, and which that question is guided by these fundamental ideals that make us who we are. So the principles themselves tell you that there is a process that's required. It tells you a role that you have, and it tells you, it says where does this have to be developed, and the competency for being a citizen that it has to be developed within institutions. And then ultimately the last principle says, and if institutions are not doing that, then they have to change. They have to be restructured. That's a political statement. And how do you do that? Well, you really have to have a base of institutions who can make the case that not only is it necessary to restructure institutions so that they can produce what they're meant to produce in a democracy, but that it is their obligation. It's leaders of those institutions. It's their obligation to do so. It's their democratic call and obligation to do so. So that means they have to form some kind of a political base of with others to make that case in the larger society. Well, following that then is a set of what we call civic standards. We borrowed that word standards because we're organizing professionals. That's our audience. That's who within institutions. They have a language that's already tied to what they have to do. So they have to have standards for their practice. And they have to have criteria for the practice, and they have to have measures. So civic organizing is a blend of three intellectual sources. One is democratic theory, one is organizing theory, and one is organizational development theory. And so the language reflects those three blends, and therefore so when we talk about standards, civic standards, that reflects an organizational development requirement for professionals. So you could call them principles if you wanted to, but we call them standards. And they seem to be the most commonly understood part of this model. So, and they can be summarized by saying those impacted by the problem have to help define the problem. But in that same sentence, it says, but in light of civic principles and the real state. That phrasing is huge because it says that it's not just sticky pieces of yellow paper on the wall that defines the problem, and then let's just sum up the most, you know, that think something is the problem. You have to define the problem in tension with what does democracy call for.
And those, what democracy calls for is in those civic principles.
That's right. So when you say in light of civic principles and the real state, that's other really huge phrase, because it says it's not going to be perfect. And we're not asking people to function in communes or outside of society. They have to take into consideration what is realistic to achieve and make a decision from that place, you know, push ourselves to find the common ground in the real condition that we have. So when you're dealing with farmers coming together with lake owners and local units of government to figure out how we're going to deal with water quality in this particular watershed, you're trying to teach people an organizing that would step into the middle of the realities of those different perspectives and strategically look for the places where we all can agree on what could be commonly done, the common good. But in the process, the organizer is teaching, this is what democracy is. This is what it takes. Here on the ground every day, this is what we have to do. Or we will not know the complexity of problems. We will be looking for quick answers. We will be putting out agendas which are absolutely polarizing if we don't stay in that place every day. Mm-hmm. Then the second standard follows. It says, okay, you can't just define the problem. You have to come up with solutions to solving the problem. Now, I think the beauty of that is that complex problems, there is no one perspective that can even define the problem, let alone solve it. So if you get people involved in defining the problem, you have to hold them accountable at the exact same time to say, okay, what can you do about that? Because they're involved in the problem. There is no question about it. And if you can't organize them back to their own role, you produce this powerlessness or this sort of sense that there's some simple answer out there that if somebody else would do it, then we would all be saved, you know, in some way. So when the organizer creates tension in and around saying, what is your role? It's not to deny that I may not have as large a role as somebody else that's 6,000 acres and of farmland, you know, and having to struggle with the question of how do I make this productive? I may be on a household in a city, but nonetheless, I still have a role. And until I can carve that out, I'm going to think it's simple. Why doesn't that farmer just do what they're supposed to be doing? You know, and then the third standard, which says that leaders have to produce a transparent process. That's key. No serious person is going to contribute if they think that the decisions are made behind the scenes, or if they don't have any way to impact the problem or the decision-making process that follows after they've decided to contribute something. So that third standard, that pushes leaders to support a process of defining the problem, supporting people who are trying to solve the problem, and building an ongoing infrastructure of meetings, you know.
So, yeah, can you say a little bit more about what that ongoing infrastructure is? What is that transparent? What are, really specifically, what makes transparency in
okay.
a process?
Well, first of all, I think we run up against questions all the time in this organizing. What we have to do is we have to realize that we're building off of democratic language, and we're building off of organizational development language. But we have a particular meaning for that. And so questions like what is an infrastructure is something that you really have to ask open as an open-ended question, which is one of the skills that we're talking about. Because people have different notions of what it is. Most often when you ask people what is an infrastructure, it depends on what perspective they're coming from. Many people would say roads, things like bridges, you know, something physical, that's an infrastructure. Some people, depending on their perspective, understand that institutions themselves, social entities, are infrastructure. We're talking about a decision-making infrastructure. And how do decisions get made? So we're literally talking about how a meeting is run and what the agenda is attached to. The agenda has to be attached to the agreements that people made to address a particular problem. It has to be run in such a way that everybody has to be accountable for follow-through on what it is that they said they're going to do. But everybody gets to impact the major governing issues that come up. in the process of implementing any kind of strategy. And they are the ones that also have to evaluate the success of what they're doing up against, again, the principles that define the work. So that we call that a civic infrastructure. It literally is the place where people develop a new imagination, a new civic imagination, develop a capacity to function in and around the obligations of governance, and they do it in and around things that they said that they would that impact them, problems that impact them. So the fourth standard, I think, is the most, it creates the biggest organizing challenge. The fourth standard says that those who are governing or in a meeting that in which you're governing and implementing a solution strategy, you have to be organizers. You're obligated to go out and constantly be interacting with those stakeholders who are not at the table but who are impacted by the problem. Now, it isn't enough just to interact with them by getting them to help define the problem and then do something about the problem. They have to link that experience and the obligation to do so to the meaning of civic principles and the meaning of active citizenship and the obligation to govern for the common good in the language that defines gives purpose to the problem-solving effort that they're doing.
That sounds like a really important element of keeping people from being polarized.
Yes,
because it is kind of growing their self-interest.
Right. So when you use the immediate investment that people have in solving a problem, you use that experience to do civic development, to get them to imagine who else needs to be at the table. Who are these people that they wouldn't talk to otherwise? And what causes them to do that? Why should they overcome all of the anger that they have about not talking to them, the fear that they might not get their own way and if they have to talk to them? What drives that? It's the obligation, this higher order obligation to be a citizen in a democracy. That's what helps them overcome the entrenched reasons for why we will not talk to people who we disagree with. And so the civic organizer has to have passion around this obligation of what it means to create a democratic narrative in every generation and in their lives and in their role. And they have to teach that. And that has to be more important than the exact problem they're attempting to face, or as important. Or what will happen is that they will engage people. They can organize people into solving a problem that people feel strongly about. But people will identify with that problem. They'll identify with having impacted that problem. And they may not have talked to anybody else that would disagree with them on the definition of that problem. You're trying to get people to take their everyday experiences and have them identify with the struggle of being a citizen and the honor of being a citizen and the challenge of it. And to have it be around something that matters to them, so.
That's seems like a very timely message, and it's kind of a hopeful message for how we might be able to get out of this kind of polarized situation that we're in now.
And we have evidence. There is. I just came yesterday from a meeting in Baldwin, Wisconsin, in dealing with questions of water quality. Testimonies from people about how having to think of themselves as citizens above and beyond water quality managers or farmers or lake owners, how that caused them to take actions that they wouldn't have taken otherwise, that change wasn't produced by some charismatic leader that was calling them to do that. It was the idea of citizenship that caused them to do that. And we have to believe in the power of that role. It's the only thing that we've got right now to get people to imagine how they have to take a look at their own behaviors. In terms of the problems that we're facing right now are systemic. They're deep. There is no one person to blame for this. And so if we get distracted by a by a politics that rewards finger pointing, we're never going to be able to get to the place where there might be some real hope in solving, in addressing these complex problems, which is in our daily lives, you know.